Hello, this is the Torg Eternity Delphi Council Debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Jay, and Mark, and today we will be continuing with the Pan-Pacifica Cosm cards. But before we get into that, we have an email, so we do encourage you to write us at torgdcd@gmail.com, and then you can have your letters read and questions answered and comments and all of that good stuff. So this one here is from Vincent, and it says, "Hello, dear debriefers. Thanks again for the podcast. It's given me tons of ideas I was able to use in my game. Keep up the Torg hype." So first, thank you for listening. And that is the purpose of this podcast, is to give those ideas and explain rules and variants and opinions and stuff like that. So let's get into the meat of the email. Some perks can be taken multiple times, like occult tech implants or spellcaster, and it's written in the perk description. Some can't, and it's implicit and doesn't raise any questions. Specifically, what about mastery and or cosm adaptation? These two basically allow you to spend more XP on stuff you'd want your character to be able to do. It's not written, you can take it multiple times. And I've read on Discord, if it's not written, you can take it multiple times. Then you can't take it multiple times. One of my players would like to buy mastery multiple times because he's a martial artist, and after a while, shouldn't a core Earth Realm runner be able to grasp Living Land savagery and Eilish spellcasting if he chose to study it? So what's your take on this? Again, thanks a lot, and may everyone enjoy their Cosmverse as much as we enjoy ours. Vincent. So thank you very much, Vincent, for writing. I will start off with just saying, what is official? So official is specifically, it says in the book that unless the perk itself says you can take it more than once, you cannot take it more than once. And that is the entire perk, not like a subset of perk. So if you take mastery for, say, melee weapons, then that's your mastery taking it once. It's not mastery and melee weapons isn't different from mastery dodge or mastery apportation or anything like that. It is mastery, and the same thing with cosm adaptation. So officially, if that perk doesn't say you can take it more than once, you cannot take it more than once. But maybe we have different ideas on certain things. So Jay, do you have any thoughts about taking mastery cosm adaptation more than once, or something else?
I mean, I've always run it pretty much as written. Seems pretty straightforward. What I will say is that I've made like a bunch of other reality perks and things for my home game. Put them out on the Infiniverse. But the way I see it is, you could probably have like another perk beyond cosm adaptation the next clearance level up. So either, I guess, Gamma or Delta, depending on where you're from, to let you do it again, perhaps. I don't think I would just let people keep doing it, because it is a ridiculously powerful perk, right? Cosm adaptation. And to me, the funny thing is, I've always thought mastery is a good idea to find your specialization. And I think it kind of cheapens it to be able to take mastery in multiple things, unless there was another stage you could go. I've always thought there should be a gamma perk grand mastery to go past 8, right? Because once you start looking at those High Lord stats, it's pretty ridiculous. And being stuck at 8, you're at a disadvantage. But maybe if you have grand mastery, like you're at that point, then you could start taking mastery in additional skills instead. Nothing really hard and fast. Those are just sort of initial ideas, though.
Mark, your thoughts?
In my opinion, one of the great sadnesses about Torg Eternity's step from Torg was that in classic Torg, if you wanted to go get something from every cosm on your character, you could. There was always a way to do it. You just had to go get it. You wanted some, you know, cyber eye from Darkhold, or you wanted to get, you know, a smart weapon from Pan Pacifica, or you wanted to get, you know, cyberware from Sarpapsy, go get some savagery stuff from the Living Land, you know, whatever. You wanted to have this jack of all trades that had a little bit from every cosm. There was a way to do that. In Torg Eternity, it's not really, you have to really, really work hard to come up with a way to get something from everywhere. It's not quite as easy to pull that out as it used to be. And Cosm Adaptation, I think, is a great way to start down that path. But as both Liam and Jay pointed out, rules is written, you get it one time. And so figure out how that works the best for your character, and then pick the thing that augments what you do. Now, stepping into the world of what Jay was just saying, in that mastery really does kind of beg to have multiple levels of, you know, like you're good at this thing, and then you're an expert at this thing, and then you're a master at this thing, and then you're a grandmaster at this thing, and, you know, maybe then you're God, or I don't know. But having that progression really does, I think mastery kind of just becomes, if you want to make that up for your own thing, your own home, and your own cosm, sure, make it a prerequisite to something. I think that makes a lot of sense. Cosm Adaptation, if you want to experiment off in your cosmverse, let them take it multiple times, I think you're going to find very quickly that they'll do it, but twice, maybe. And it won't be as cool as you thought it was going to be, because taking it only gives you access to that class of perk that you chose. And then you've got to start digging into that class, and you've started at the bottom, whereas you're like beta clearance, and so you're facing all these high threats. Well, you're going to the very bottom of alpha level perk choices to get back up. Not as cool as it sounds, although it is cool. And that's where you begin to get into that I have a like realm runner that ought to be able, like the email says, the realm runner, that to me realm runner is the new version of I want to go to all the cosms and get my little shot glass or my spoon from, you know, I went to Cyber Papacy and all I got was this lousy t-shirt that digitally tells the Cyber Pope what I did wrong. You know, that kind of thing. You could do it with that way, but you'll have to bend the rules as written to do it. So that's up to you. It's your cosmverse. You do it how you want.
So my thoughts on this also kind of come from a classic Torg stance. And I will say, before, I believe Cosm Adaptation came out in the player's beta clearance.
The beta, yeah.
Beta primer.
So it wasn't out when I wrote Paraverse, and that was one of the things I was looking for. And I think mine was even a little more broader, where I allowed you to, you had to, well, I said you had to go to the cosm first, because I don't think a person brand new core earther should be able to just automatically start off with Isle stuff. So you had to go to that reality, you had to experience that reality, and then I just allowed you to take, if you bought that perk, and it wasn't called, I didn't call it Cosm Adaptation, I don't remember what I called it, but I allowed you to take then anything from that realm. So any of the, you didn't have to limit yourself to one category. You could do any of the perks from that. They still counted as a contradiction to you, so you, many cases, would be walking 4-case contradiction. But that's kind of the trade-off, in my opinion, for it. I do agree with Jay that it shouldn't be something that you just, every other adventure you're gaining a new cosm abilities, because then that does kind of lessen the people that are from that. If I could be from Core Earth and have everything, then why would I ever be anything else but Core Earth, which is kind of the opposite of classic Torg, when very few people wanted to be from Core Earth because of world laws and them actually affecting you in other realities and stuff. So on that one, I kind of like Jay's idea of, hey, maybe if you're a core earther at this clearance level, you get it and you can take it again once you get to the next clearance level, or maybe when you get a certain amount of XP or something, a total XP, that your game master might, you know, allow you to do that. I don't see where, as long as it was thought about and understood what the ripple effects would happen from this being allowed. You know, if you go into it knowing, eyes open, everybody on the same page in your group and your game master, I could see where this would work. With the mastery thing, I'll just say, after decades of playing classic Torg, my player, because there was no limit. You could just, as long as you had the possibilities, because you use possibilities as XP, as long as you had the possibilities to increase a skill, you could just increase it to infinity. 8 tended to be where most of my players stopped, because it started to get prohibitively more expensive, and then they just bought more skills. And secondly, those who went that entire, kept their first character and lasted through the entire time we played Torg, classic Torg, they might have one or possibly two skills at 10 or 11, and nobody went above that. They were still able, and one of the things I always loved about Torg, any Torg, Torg Eternity, classic Torg, is that I always had experiences where you could bring in a brand new character and they still could feel effective in the adventure. They might not be as good, but they still, it wasn't like other games that if you bring in a first level character and everybody's 20th level, you can't do anything in the adventure. Torg always was one that all my players felt like they could do something. Going along with that, one of the changes Torg Eternity made was there is a limit to successes. So after outstanding, there's nothing. So if you get a really, really high skill in ads and a high attribute, you're going to succeed more often and you're going to get outstanding, good and outstanding successes more often, but you're not going to get better than outstanding. So there is kind of a hard-coded limit to how well that would be. So if your game master wanted you to do mastery, or you convinced your game master, your game master did a flat, hey, everybody could do this, I wouldn't see it as a huge problem math-wise. But as Jay said, the way it is now, that's kind of like, this is my focus, this is my purpose of life. It's almost like a, even though the paths, the vitality paths in Pan Pacifica came later, it's similar to that. You're making a choice, and this is the choice, this is what I'm good at. Kind of like those vitality paths are paths. They're like, this is my life's work, is to go down this path and to get it, and then you get mastery within that, and then you can continue down it. So it's one of those, how do you view lore, how do you view game mechanics. I don't see either one of these being completely game breaking if you would do it, as long as you went into it with the knowledge that if I'm allowing multiple cosm adaptations, I could have a character that just got really wide. Maybe not deep, but extremely wide. Do I want a complete jack of all cosms, a jack of all realities character out there? If you're fine with that, I would say go for it. Same thing with mastery. Just be aware of, if you keep buying mastery over and over and over again, you're not buying other perks as well, and the cost is going to get higher with that as well. So officially, no. Unofficially, these are things that I don't think are too game breaking, as long as everybody understands what's going on. So thank you very much for writing us, Vincent, And again, for anybody listening or watching these, you can email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. So let's move on to Pan Pacifica. This is part two. And just quickly, there are multiples of some of these cards because if you watched or listened to the previous episode, there was a switch of world laws, and when the world laws got switched, some of these cards kind of got replaced, quote unquote, replaced by new cards. But all three of us, I believe, are very much in favor of using the cards that you need to use. So if there are places where the cure for the contagion didn't take place or hasn't got to yet, then keep those infection cards in there. If you're in some place that the Law of Vengeance hasn't gone away, or for some reason you want to reintroduce it, then you can bring those cards in. And I always love the idea of just tailoring the Cosm deck to your needs and the adventure, and not necessarily going, oh, they replaced these, now these are the new 20 that I always have to do. And if you look behind Jay, he's all for new Cosm cards. So you can check out his stuff on the Infiniverse Exchange on Drive-Thru RPG if you can't get enough Cosm cards that might satisfy your itch for a little bit. So let's move on.
They're good stuff, too. They're good stuff. Go check them out.
Just copy them from here.
Yeah, just duck and let people write it down. Card number six, and there's only one card number six, so this is Fists of Fury. For the remainder of the scene, unarmed combat is favorite skill for all player characters. Jay, your thoughts of Fists of Fury?
Well, this is just a good one. Rare in that it specifies player characters. That's terminology that's not often used in this game. Doesn't include any followers, I guess. But you don't have to worry about the enemies getting a bonus from this. Obviously, it depends on if you have anyone who's an unarmed combatant, but there's no negative. The only possible negative is you didn't draw a better card for you. So this is a good one.
Mark, your thoughts on Fists of Fury?
I mean, it's limited in that, you know, if you have a gun character, you're all about gun fu, and you've got a melee weapon and a pistol, where does the unarmed combat come in?
Kicks.
I mean, yeah, but if you don't kick well, that's not what you're built for, because strength is your dump stat because you do a pistol damage for the most part. Or maybe you're mid. I don't know. It just seems like an edge case and limited use. So is it good? Yeah. Is it better than good? Not really.
Yeah, for me, it has, like Jay said, no downside. It's not like there's something bad going to happen. So at least it's completely a good card in the fact that there's no penalties, no downside to it. My Eidos Unarmed Combat Warrior would love Pan Pacifica for this card. Pan Pacifica Electric Samurai, probably not so much, which is kind of interesting. I would just say, as a game master, again, think of ramifications if you wish to expand this, because there were some cases, like, to give an example, the perk Whirlwind specifically was for melee weapons only, and so many authors and players and game masters always read that to be any both unarmed combat and melee weapons, that it got changed later to encompass both of those. If that's something that you wanted to use and just say close combat, which would mean unarmed combat and melee combat, I would probably be okay with that. Yeah, if you're Mark's range person, you're not doing it, but then it's Fists of Fury, not bullets shooting out of fury. And then you get at least all the combat, melee combat, close combat people involved, but that would be not what the card says. That would be a house rule. But I think it could possibly be fair. Even if not, again, no downsides. If you have it, you can play it. The bad guys won't get it, as Jay reminded us. The big thing. And if you have, if you're the ranged person or the spellcaster, this psionic person, and you have one person who does it, at least he's favored. So why not use it? So.
Hang on a second before we move off of this one, Liam. Is it Path of the Gun where you're considered armed? You got just a
gun. Let's see.
Bullet ballet, one shock to substitute fire combat for unarmed combat, is considered to have two melee weapons for purposes of two melee weapon fighting. Double strike, both in unarmed combat and a fire combat attack. If it's considered as, would you allow that to be?
Yeah, if it says that even though you're having guns, but it's counting in more like brass knuckles or something, and it's saying you use unarmed combat, then I would say yes.
There, okay.
There you could have your cake and eat it too. So
it's also worth mentioning in Pan Pacifica, there's a lot of security checkpoints and things where you're not necessarily going to be able to go guns blazing or fireballing, and you might just need to grapple someone and quietly shut them down.
True.
Or you get into a fight with like just a fist fight at a bar or something with people. So you don't always want to be going full lethal all the time in Pan Pacifica. So this can help that too.
True.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okay. So we will go to the first number 7, which is based off of the infection. And it says, is that a bite? ? Play when in a public place and not in combat. A Kanawa patrol arrives and attempts to take in anyone who is wounded, sick, or may have been exposed to infection. This applies to the heroes, allies, and random bystanders. All Storm Knights gain one possibility. So what are your thoughts on, is that a bite, Jay?
So this is a very good characterful card for Pan Pacifica during the contagion. I have had it in combination with card 8 completely derail many adventures. It's kind of like if you're like just preaching against the Cyber Pope in the Cyber Papacy or something like that, like acting like PCs sometimes act in public. Realistically, you're really gonna have to like deal with the players, and like it's gonna be an issue. Now, this card doesn't necessarily mean you are infected, it just means a patrol comes. So if you're not infected, that's fine. They might just be looking for a bribe or something. It's only worth one possibility, so it shouldn't be that big of a deal. However, if one of the characters is infected and you're in a public place and it gets found out, it's going to be a huge deal. So just be prepared for that unholy combination of cards. And my players are gleefully combo them together. So it can be very, very dangerous. Just be prepared. But on its own, this is fine. It just adds a little bit of paranoia and some police state trappings to it. And it possibly can even introduce some new NPCs too. So really good card.
Mark, your thoughts on, is that a bite?
Yeah, I like this card too. This is a great RP card. Depending on how much or how little you want to introduce into the scene with your players. Because it isn't that your Storm Knights are infected. This is not a Kanawha. I mean, it could be a Kanawha patrol that comes up and says, you, and points to all the Storm Knights and says, come here, we think you're infected. It could be that, but that's a little, you know, clue by four over the head kind of thing that's just in your face. What I like to see this more as, which is the police state aspect Jay was hinting at, is that, you know, you're out at the night market or whatever, and, you know, Kanawha patrols pull up at this intersection, and well, everybody wants to avoid Kanawha patrols, but they're blocking the street, and you're like, huh, well, we'll go use a different street, and you turn around, you hit the next intersection, and there's another set of Kanawha patrols, and you look, and all of a sudden they're there, and then they're there, and now here comes the troops, and they're hurting everyone, and you're like, oh, this is bad. They aren't looking at you directly yet, But they've closed the cordoning off the area, and now you've got this mass of humanity that they're, and you don't know what's going on, right? And you don't know what they're looking for. And as the GM, maybe they're just, you know, it, I get that the contagion's been cured. Well, guess how they cured the contagion? The police state, when they get the hint that there's a contagion in a spot, they lock it down, they control it, and they freaking filter it out in a hurry. And if they even suspect that you've got it, well, guess what? You have to go through quarantine. And then we have to take you and filter you and scrub you down and take all your stuff and put it over here. So now you're all naked in the box over here so we can disinfect you, and you have to stay over here for, you know, whatever. That's how they control, that's how they stamp out, that's how a police state stamps out the freaking contagion. And so here they come looking for you, and now maybe your Storm Knights need a help getting to the next clue or the next scene, or, you know, let them come up with, well, how are you getting out of this? Let them author a DSR to escape the cordoning, you know, because players, when you let the players have their head and go, you know, well, you know, I don't know, how do you want to get out of this? Let them be creative and come up with a step A, a step B, a step C, and a step D, and you set the DNs, and then off we go. We start doing this, and if they screw it up or complications, you know, there's Conwell guys all over the place. So that can be very stressful for players, and you haven't had a shot fired. So it doesn't, you know, it's not a, it's a very Pan Pacifica thing to do. It's quite a bit of stress on the players. So there's this high level of, oh my gosh, what happens if we screw this up? And no, I mean, it's something different from combat, which I always like getting, if you can get that all together without having, you know, bullets flying or arrows shot or spells slung, then it's a good day. So I like this card a lot. Now, as Jay pointed out, it's only worth one possibility, which I, yeah, if you're going to go my route and you get all complicated with stuff, maybe you look at it and give them a little extra, depending on, again, you're back down to the how hard did they work to get out of it thing. But if you make it simple and it's just like, okay, we're going to do a group stealth to try and blend and then duck into this, we found an unlocked door, when we're going to duck into this alleyway and then hop into the side building and find our way out on the other side of the cordon, that's whatever, then okay, just give them one.
So yeah, I like this, and again, it goes along with what we've discussed in past episodes of the not just being strict and rigid allows the game master to do different things. It could be a, hey, here's two Kanawha people with a doctor, and they're just checking everybody out. And okay, and unless you're going to play some of the cards that we've talked about or will talk about. None of the Storm Knights are infected, but maybe one of the innocent bystanders is, and maybe they're going to be pulled to the side and dealt with, especially pre-vac, you know, vaccine when it can't be cured. And then as Storm Knights, what are you going to do? Are you going to allow that to happen, being Storm Knights? Are you going to get into a tuffle over an innocent? You know, you can add things like that into it. So yeah, I think it's pretty cool. Again, it is one possibility, so I wouldn't, you know, bring in a huge Kanawha strike force unless they played that card or other ones. And again, this is one of those where I like that the cards can, when players start playing it, they can just compound it, but they're doing it
Oh
themselves.
yeah.
They are
That's good
doing
stuff.
it, yeah.
That's good
So,
stuff though.
yeah, let's move on to the second. Number seven, seriously, question mark. So both of them were questions. Play at the start of an encounter. One or more opponents in the battle are surprisingly tougher. The game master may apply a template, see the threats in Pan Pacifica, or mutate a Xenogospog to a higher generation. After the encounter, heroes gain up to three possibilities depending on the threat. So Jay, what are your thoughts on seriously?
Pretty good. It's pretty average as far as the dino attack style cards go, you know, like it's an already existing combat, so it buffs up one of them, kind of like the Core Earth one does. Yeah, pretty good. Not too much to talk about really. Templates just in general are really cool, very handy for GMs, and this gives you carte blanche to use one that you haven't had a chance to yet.
Mark, your thoughts on Seriously?
I like it. It is the Dino Attack of Pan Pacifica. So, you know, you have a plan. If you're going to use the card, if you're going to keep the card in the deck, have a plan for, you know what the adventure is set in front of you. You know what your recurring threats are, either mooks or higher, or what the plan is. And so you can come up with something that makes sense along the path that your Storm Knights are going to take. It's something that, you know, they've already encountered, crops up, that later in the story has mutated or changed in some way. Or you can have, you don't have necessarily, if the contagion's not part of your storyline, that's fine, but you can use the contagion to take something that is part of your storyline and say, well, they got mutated by something about the contagion, some aspect about the contagion caused the problem for here. And, you know, that's why Kanoa shows up and causes you problems, because they're like, oh, that's contagion, we got to deal with that. But it's Dino Attack, so to follow the path that Lehman set out early on, when this is, look at how hard, you know, come up with some two or three options that might fit any situation and pick the one that's best, but how much difficulty, how hard it is for your Storm Knights is where I would gauge how many possibilities they get for the effort that they have to put into it. But it's a good card. It's a lot of flavor. It's just Dino Attack for Pan Pacifica, so you just pull the stuff you've already got and cobble it together and stick it in front of the Storm Knights, and that's what you run with.
I would say it does state that you're kind of in an encounter already, so it's not right. It could be what you're already fighting or about to fight. So the game master, if you want to be prepared, prepare every encounter on what those extra toughness they
well,
are.
Okay. I read that.
I'll roll those bad boys randomly.
Right. Or you just say, hey, give me 5 minutes to up these guys. The thing, it could be a Kanawa security have better armor or better weapons. It could be that. It doesn't necessarily have to be, but it could be Xeno Gospog. It could be, oh, these
could
people
just be
have
gene mods.
Gene mods or something.
Or just drop a psychic power on them.
Right. Now, what I do also want to say is most of the ones like Dino Attack and the generic at an encounter say 1 to 3 possibilities, and this card does not. This says up to 3 possibilities. So, as an example, you're like going through, okay, I'm going to make this guy tougher by adding a special ability X. And then special ability X never triggers, or the bad guys don't get to use it.
He was killed before he could blink.
And the party takes him out. Well, that was no different than how it would have been anyway. So then maybe they get 0 possibilities because it didn't actually do anything. So the up to 3 could be 0. Now, if that thing occurred and it did anything, I would at least give them 1 because that was something that it didn't do. That it wouldn't have done. But if it was just basically the same fight, you don't necessarily have to do it. So think about how that works. Let's move on to the first number 8. You Don't Look So Good. This is, again, a pre-cure. A play immediately when drawn, so you don't have a choice. You play immediately when drawn. Your Storm Knight shows symptoms of possible infection. You do not roll again on 10s until the end of the act, which I like to say your possibilities are ups instead of just the long of the don't roll a 10, your 10s don't explode or whatever. Just say they're ups now. You spend a possibility, counts as an up. If your hero perishes during this time, he rises soon after as a Jiangshi. Gain 3 possibilities. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on You Don't Look So Good?
So this is what I was talking about, the combination of You Don't Look So Good and Is That a Bite? Because if they are checking you, they will find that you are, in fact, infected. And now it will be a cause for great alarm for everybody. and your hope of being nondescript and unobserved has gone out the window. I ran an adventure where people were arriving in South Korea, and like the very beginning was them getting off the plane at the airport where there was a mandatory check. And of course, this game, this card got played because you have to, and it immediately threw everything out of whack. So it is worth the three possibilities. I do award the three possibilities immediately. I don't wait for the situation to resolve because they're probably going to need those three possibilities. Now, that said, if you're in the middle of, if the adventure starts in the middle of nowhere, and you're like out in the woods or something, then it might not be as big of a deal, but just be aware this can be really crazy. Now, also, the thing I like is in the Pan Pacifica Day One adventure, they have all those extra contagion cards. So I liked also giving players one of those instead of using the up thing, the don't reroll tens. Because don't reroll tens is A, hard to remember, and B, in combination with the additional penalties you get from those other cards, would probably be a bit much. But on its own, it's fine. I find those give like some extra flavor. So they say, oh, you've got this rage or you're very melancholy. And as we mentioned previously, there are additional, I think it was Siskoid, there are additional contagion cards on the Infiniverse put up by someone else now. So even more to check. So if someone plays this, it gives you a wide variety of things you can do.
Mark, your thoughts on You Don't Look So Good.
This is one of those good news, bad news cards. You need possibilities. You're going to get them for this. You're also going to be rolling ups instead of regular rolls. And it's that really can hurt. You gotta be in the flavor of Pan Pacifica though for this to really have the effect, because as Jay pointed out, mandatory, you know, you might want to just throw a mandatory check in some point just to ratchet up the tension, give them an easy, you know, if you want to let them have a stealth out, or the one person who is infected or has a bite or doesn't look so good, maybe they figure something else out to get around it, because it's got three possibilities is a lot, so there needs to be some impact, there has to be a cost to that. There's, you know, I don't look so good, that doesn't really have a mechanic to it other than you now don't look so good. Well, in Pan Pacifica, that's significant because they've worked very, very hard to eradicate the contagion. And the only way that they continue to keep that status as being in check is to continue to eradicate any signs of the contagion. Well, guess what? You now have a sign of the contagion. And so that's going to 100% complicate whatever mission you're on. As Jay said earlier, it could derail whatever mission you're on. And it should, because you just earned three possibilities. You ought to come out, you're going to have to come out of this with figuring out a way to get back on plan and avoid this. But this goes for the entire act. So, could this pop up again? Absolutely. And I like it. It's a good card. It's a good flavor card for Pan Pacifica, as long as at least one mandatory check is encountered, in my opinion, because that it doesn't really matter. There's no game mechanic effect to the Storm Knight other than they look like they've been bitten.
Well, there is an effect, and I think I want to
specify that it's the roll.
It's not
it's the roll.
It's saying that their possibilities are up is actually far more limiting than what the real thing is. It's just that you don't reroll tens. Like normally, if you roll a 10 or a 20, you reroll an add.
Oh, true. Sorry, I was thinking of something completely different.
It's a lot more minor. If possibilities were up, that would
it's
be
like
a huge
unskilled
problem.
It's like unskilled.
It's not like being unskilled. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes.
I was incorrect in my remembering of that.
Which I ran with it.
Which is like what Mark said, though, not a huge penalty.
The up, sorry for clarification, is if you roll under a 10, it doesn't count as a minimum of a 10.
So
sorry.
But it would on the, this only says 10s don't, this only says 10s don't explode. So.
Okay, so, yeah, I'll say, having the Pan Pacifica source book now, I would even make this probably worse because it's been clarified in that infected Storm Knights become Yokai and not Jiangshi, which are more powerful versions, so that's what I would probably do.
And regular infected humans are turn if they're KO'd.
Right. And so that might prevent a little bit more. And it just says if they perish, they soon rise. So it's not an immediate. It could come back. And I would probably have that either Jiangshi or the Yokai, you know, maybe not recognizable as Joe, but it might be like wearing Joe's bandana on some pseudopod sticking out of it, or, you know, something like that. So,
John Carpenter's The Thing. You got to know that it was the guy or the gal. It's got to be recognizable. Head all turned sideways disfigured, you know, and whatever.
Something like that. You would know it was them, and that's just how I would do it. So let's move on to the second number 8, the post cure news at 11. When played, heroes find themselves being filmed or observed by members of the media, either directly or through drones. All Storm Knights gain one possibility. So, Jay, your thoughts on news at 11.
I believe I said in the last video that this is like my favorite kind of encounter to hit parties with in Pan Pacifica, so I really like this one. This time they're at least prepared for it, you know, because they play it themselves. But yeah, I like it's a very different feel than any of the other kind of ones. It's just one possibility, so it shouldn't be too detrimental to them. But yeah, just really like it.
Mark, your thoughts on news at 11?
YouTubers just with a little gaggle of them with selfie sticks and cameras and whatever just make obnoxious a-holes out of themselves in public, accosting people and doing things, and that somehow I don't understand how that's
content, interesting, baby.
Huh?
It's content.
Well, whatever. Yeah, I don't understand how that's interesting to watch, but it is apparently.
It's like flash mobs over here.
Yeah, but it's people watching on YouTube and they get clicks out of it and whatever, and it's the more outrageous their encounter with the normal people is, the more clicks and views they get, which earns them money and stuff. And so the people watching are feeding. But anyway, that's Jay's thing, which I think is cool with this one. Or you can just simply have a traditional news crew pop up with that on location shot that catches them. Hey, wait, are you getting this? Are we getting this, Bob? You know, and now that you can see that. As you're trucking on by to go do your thing, you're like, yeah, they are getting this. Oh, that's not good. We're supposed to be clandestine. And what are you going to do about that?
Yeah, the only thing that I would say is they're gaining a possibility, so the news coverage should not be good. It shouldn't be like, hey, look at these Storm Knights doing this great thing. No, they're going to spin it. They'll take that footage of you saving people and make it look like you're causing destruction or something like that. So they're getting a possibility out of it. Again, it is the can't really do anything against it because it's done, it's filmed, it's over, it's out there and live streamed or whatever. So, news at 11. Moving on to number 9, sold out. Play immediately when drawn. Your hero will be betrayed by a non-player character he considers an ally this adventure. Gain 1 to 3 possibilities depending on the severity of the betrayal. GM's call. All other Storm Knights in the party gain 1 possibility. So the person who has to play this gains 3. Everybody else gains 1. And the Game Master chooses the severity, the award, etc. So Jay, your thoughts on sold out?
love this card. This card generates so much paranoia. And hopefully your players don't play this and then decide to like win by just never talking to any NPCs. It kind of goes against the entire idea of Pan Pacifica. You should be constantly introducing new NPCs when you're in Pan Pacifica. For this card, for any other trader style cards, there's a bunch of them. But make them helpful and friendly, like actually a benefit before that happens, so that when they do turn traitor, even though they knew it was coming, because this card's been sitting on the table for 3 weeks, it still hurts. And that's one of the other things it says, this adventure. It doesn't say this act or scene, it's adventure. If you play this at the very first scene, like when you draw it at the very beginning of Operation Soft Cell, it might be Act 7. It finally gets cashed in. Who knows, right? So just that long scale dread. And then usually, and then once it's over, there's this relief, right? So I love this card. It's come up. It's done a lot of heavy lifting in the games. My group, most of us played a lot of Cyberpunk beforehand, which had sort of similar, less than trustworthy NPCs to work with, so many of us were used to this, so it was nice to have the betrayal, you know, sort of flagged. But don't forget that it doesn't mean you can't have other just regular story betrayals as well. Mm-hmm. This is an extra one in addition. You can still do whatever else you want. So it's kind of funny when you have someone betray them and then the card still doesn't get resolved and they're like, wait, what is this? Yeah, really, really like it. Probably my overall favorite Pan Pacifica card.
Mark, your thoughts on Sold Out?
Yeah, I'm with Jay. This is a fantastic card. This is potentially my favorite card in the deck too. I like this card a lot, especially when it comes out early, because it makes everybody potentially that they talk to the potential betrayer. But as Jay pointed out, it's absolutely imperative to have them be helpful first so that there's something to betray. You have to get some trust before you can betray anything, because otherwise you're just suspicious. And everybody's suspicious in Pan Pacifica until you get to know them. And then they betray you. Other than that, I love the long play on this one. You might... you can do some prepare. You can prepare for this a little bit, but it's the, you know who you have as far as NPCs are concerned in your game. The ones that are almost the best all the time are when they go, I need a contact. We need a cab driver or something, and so they drop a contact, and you have to pull out of your backside some. NPC you didn't plan on, and you start making them, and they become like the sidekick that runs around for the whole adventure, and everybody loves them until they stab them in the back because of this card.
Yeah, I would go on a couple of thoughts that I would have is, one, I would keep my ears open as a game master and not have this card be the one that they think it is, because they're all gonna immediately hone in on this guy's gonna betray us, especially if it's in the adventure already.
Yeah.
You know, there is I have intentionally changed adventures that had people betray the party because the party knew that they would be betrayed.
It was so friggin' obvious.
And it was so obvious, and it was like every NPC that was of any importance was betraying them left, right. And they were like, okay, this one's coming up. Well, I guess he's going to betray us also. Let's be nice. You know, let's just try to play in as our Storm Knights and not just kill the guy, because we know he's going to be. And then I flipped it. So on this one, I would really be looking at the ones that they don't expect, and kind of going off on Mark's thing, it doesn't have to be a new NPC. It could be somebody that they've dealt with before that's helped them. And occasionally, you know, you might have somebody like a Realm Runner who drops off supplies or gives them information, or, you know, they're their contact back at. Let me state this. There is a overall theme in Torg Eternity, and explicitly stated the Delphi Council will never betray the Storm Knights. That was implemented to allow the Game Master and players to have a social contract in which if they hand over Eternity Shards to the Delphi Council, they knew that those Eternity Shards would not therefore come back and bite them, because in most games that's what happens. You have a company or higher ups are like, hey, give us your super special thing. That instantly makes players go, they're going to betray us. So as a blanket statement, the Delphi Council doesn't betray Storm Knights. You as your table, and you might want to set this up before you even start any adventures and you do a session zero or something, as a, hey, what about an operative of the Delphi Council?
Or the institution won't.
Right, the institution won't, the higher ups won't. But in Pan Pacifica, out of all the places, it would make sense for this type of thing to happen. Or you could have that person be, say, a middleman between the Delphi Council and you. So the Delphi Council gives this person information or goods and services or whatever, and then that person gives them to the Storm Knights. Have somebody, like Mark said, maybe it was a connection card that was played three adventures ago, and then just every time in a connection card that made sense, it was that same person. This pops up. They're probably thinking it's somebody in the adventure. So when you pull out somebody from a previous adventure to betray him, it just twists the knight that much worse.
Yeah.
I have found that my players, and you and your table, you and your players might have different opinions, but I have had the best luck of getting those emotions and people afterwards saying that was really cool, not a being mad at me as a game master. So again, be able to judge your group where I've made it personal, and the more personal it is, and that's usually when they form a good bond with somebody, and then they get betrayed, and then they are dead set on taking out that person. And it's somebody, once they're sold out, maybe they find out about it and then they want to hunt them down, and then you have another add-on to it. So just all cool types of possibilities. Or you could just have it simple and just, oh, the guy showed up. Just keep it random. I would say whenever this gets played, never have it be the same type of thing. Always make it different. So,
or let the romance card betray.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Farm that extra three possibilities out of it.
That's right.
Okay, so that was card number 9. Let's move on to card number 10, Hard Boiled. Play while taking a... taking a recovery, your Storm Knight stares at his foes. In Pan Pacifica, it might be his phone, his Zuzu. Stares at his foe, wipes the blood from his mouth, and signals that he's not done yet. All foes are very stymied. So, Jay, your thoughts on Hard Boiled?
Well, this card does a magical thing that very few things in Torg can do, which is make you want to take the recovery action. There's like almost never a reason to do it, but this is so good that, yeah, you just do it. Everyone, very stymied, no matter how many people there are, no matter how far away they are. I mean, they're still in the encounter, obviously, right. But like, it's really, really good. Know when to use it. Don't necessarily waste it like right away, or you might actually want to use it right away, especially if it's against like Gosspog or something where like
surprise
a bunch of
round.
If it's a surprise round or like you failed fear checks, so you know you want to make
gotta
it
have
harder
an action,
for them
though.
To hit you. It's true. You have to be able to do the recovery, so you can't.
True.
But if there's guys that could soak, if you have a surprise round, you could do this, and then everyone else could go wail on them, right? But either way, it's just good. Very stymied on everybody is nothing to sneeze at.
Mark, your thoughts on Hard Boiled?
Yeah, this is one of those affects everybody thing that's really nice. And I'm looking for something because it occurred to me. Oh, where is it?
Like, recovery has to be the only thing you do, right?
Floating mine.
Yeah.
So that you Oh,
you get a surprise round and then take the recovery action and very stymie to everybody. At
there's
the beginning of any
combos.
combat, spend two shock to be vulnerable and able to act in a surprise round. If not surprised, spend two shock to be vulnerable and gain a surprise round. And so then you can make all of a sudden everybody in the room is very stymied that you guys just walked in,
Yeah.
which is
Spending two
cool.
shocks, not too much of a problem if you're recovering.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just a
so
thought. It's a great card.
I agree with Jay. I don't know. I can't even think if I've seen somebody take a recovery action ever. It's even lower on the totem pole as, say, active defense,
All right.
I've
which
done
I
it. I've taken
would,
recovery.
but it's a you spend your action, you gain two, or you gain back two shock. Most of the time, people think I can do something else that would help that situation better. Using it for this is like a no roll interaction attack success
Against everybody.
against everybody. So yeah, this is a very, very cool card. It takes your action, but if you're going to intimidate, taunt, whatever, you're going to do that anyway. So.
Yeah, it just doesn't get you a destiny card, is the only thing.
Okay, so the last one we're going to do today is Double Agent. When played, an agent from Operation Eris will reveal themselves and aid the heroes this act. This agent may be a new character or one the heroes have already met. So, Jay, your thoughts on Double Agent?
I like this card. I'm kind of weird about like Operation Eris agents are supposed to be secret and just have them suddenly show themselves. And they're also everywhere. They're not just in Pan Pacifica, but I guess the law of intrigue makes it come out more. I don't know. But it is nice to remind players that there are infiltrated agents everywhere. So that's why you don't just chainsaw the heads off of every enemy you defeat. Johnny.
That was very specific.
And it doesn't have to be like a major NPC. It can just be like the waiter or something as well, right? So it's a nice way just to give them a little help if they need it or they ask for it. If the players then completely blow that agent's cover, though, there should be consequences. Remind them that this is being done on purpose, and them helping you is actually a really big deal. So don't waste it. And if they waste it, they should have to hear about it from the Delphi Council. Have Quinn Sebastian show up and start swearing at them. I don't care, but there should be something. But yeah. Oh, otherwise, it's a good card. It could get people out of a jam if they really need it. It's almost like an idea card, kind of wrapped into the connection.
Mark, your thoughts on Double Agent?
I could see this getting played in one of two ways. Like Jay just said, the connection idea card where we're stuck, we don't know what to do. Let's play this and have somebody come help us. Okay, cool. The Eris agent isn't necessarily revealing himself like, ha-ha, I'm an Eris agent, look through, like News on 11 kind of thing. But it could be somebody who very subtly, you're sitting there in a cafe trying to suss out what you should be doing next, and everybody's drawing a blank, and somebody walks over and kind of gently puts a thumb drive on the table, gives you the Operation Eris high sign and in a clandestine way, and then walks off. And you're like, God, I don't know what just happened. Somebody put that in your, who's got the deck? Put that in your deck and let's see what's going on. And this gives you the bit of information that maybe the blown streetwise earlier would have given you, or you haven't even thought to go try and persuade the apple cart vendor who's been watching the corner that is opposite the bank that you're trying to figure out how to get into. So maybe that there's that way. The other way I like to look at this one is to put it on the table, and then it's on the table as a almost like consumable resource that doesn't have to get dealt with right then. It's like, I don't really know how to use this now, or you know that there's going to be a better time later when this, like, oh, I've got this perfect cinematic thing that can happen, that this will be perfect. I know they're kind of stuck now, and I've got another way for them to get beyond where they are, but it's perfect over here. It's like, we're going to just leave that on the table for now. And then later on, when that event happens, you're like, eh, here we go. And then you discard it, and the thing happens. I like using it that way too, because then it's they're kind of wondering what's going on, and especially in the virtual tabletop, cards that we drop on the virtual tabletop and stick in a corner somewhere tend to get forgotten, until somebody does, hey, we just have a mishap, is that card still active? Oh crap, okay, here comes a demon, or whatever. You tend to forget about it, and then all of a sudden it's, aha, here we go. And I like the card because I know Operation Eris agents are supposed to be everywhere, but let's face it, they came about mostly from Pan Pacifica. So, yeah.
So, my thoughts is have this double agent come out. Have them, introduce themselves, whatever, gain their trust, and then become a triple agent with Sold Out.
I knew where you were going as soon as, like, he was like, well, I don't know what he's doing.
So yeah, and then, you know, because they might have played the Sold Out a while before, you know, again, it's any time during the adventure, and then later need that help, so that double agent comes out, gives them the help that they need, and then either, you know, gets them to the place that they need to go so that you actually do the card. You know, the card is giving them good information. So I wouldn't take away that from the card. But after that's done, maybe they come back the next scene and they think that they're going to give them better information. And then that's when their triple agent shows up. So, yeah.
Or they could have even gotten caught doing what they did to help the PCs. And now the bad turned. Guys... they're being like tortured or something, and they give up the goods. Yeah.
So yeah, that's a lot of
options.
Or mind control.
That never happens.
Lots of options. So that will be it for today's episode. We do thank you for me either watching or listening. And again, please do email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. Until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmverse. Bye.